Okay, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Get Educated podcast. Today, we are taking a look at some of the keys that I have learned throughout my, I call it a career. It's pretty short, but mini career of teaching and educating. So to give you guys a background, I obviously have been kind of tutoring and, you know, helping peers throughout most of my education. And back a couple of years ago, I had become a tutor for a math company, or well, just a tutoring company. I became a math tutor for them. I worked there for about a year and a half, became the head tutor in just a few months, and just loved them. You know, had awesome management, awesome owners as well. I'm not going to give the name of the company away, but they were so sweet to me, and they really taught me well, brought me up well, put me in good amount of situations. And the best part about that job is like how many students I was able to see at a crazy diversity of learning ability and learning, you know, starting places and all that. So I learned a lot. And then post that, I obviously kept tutoring freelance, tutored through college as well, and just, you know, fell in love with like watching people learn things and get excited, especially about math, because there's just such a stigma to math and learning math is so painful and all this, but it's like you could really make it fun. And I took great joy in making it fun and building those relationships. So we're just going to talk about a couple of keys that I learned. The reason why I think this is important for this podcast is if we're going to talk about changing the school system and all that, it's like we have to change our strategies to teach people things, right? Like we have to relook at curriculums, break it all down. You know, obviously we talked in previous episodes of what a new curriculum could look like, just barely, and we're going to talk about that more. And I'd love your guys' thoughts and opinions on that too. But if we're going to introduce new things, we have to also communicate them in different ways. It's not just a reshaping, right? We're trying to do a whole renovation of the whole thing. And sometimes that means gutting stuff and applying way better strategies. So I'm just going to talk about three kind of keys that I've used that I've found to be really effective. And I encourage you guys to practice these and try these on anything. You know, teaching is not just a school teacher to student thing. It's an everyday thing where we're all communicating in different ways, and we all need to communicate effectively and communicate in a way that's helpful for people to understand what we're saying. And sometimes that is in a more teaching type of way, especially with our friends. You know, we are called to critique and to help and all that with humility. And sometimes that does take like very wise approaches to things. So let's talk briefly about these three keys. So the first one I want to talk about is relationship. Relationship is awesome. It makes all of this worthwhile. You know, if you're just trying to run the world, do a job, especially as a teacher, it would be very, very draining and super boring because you just don't look at people as they are, which is another human being who is doing more than just learning the concept that you're teaching them. But what this does for the student is a whole slew of great things. So the first is trust. We are evidently very designed to learn from people we trust. It's built into us, and probably from being able to learn from our parents. And, you know, for most people, I understand there's a lot of exceptions, but we are raised and to trust our parents and to learn from them all the things that they got brought up doing and what they're doing now. And, you know, we've spent a long time of human history where people were brought up to kind of continue what their parents were doing. And we've really broken away from that in America, which I don't think is bad because of like the intensity of the change and the intensity of what the world looks like now. It's just different. But that being said, that mechanism of really learning easily from people we trust is still built into us. So teachers kind of have this tough time where they don't have a gripping attention on all the students. And probably that's largely because the student has no reason to trust the teacher outside of maybe they were raised to respect authority well or whatever it is. But because there's no relationship, there's not really a subconscious reason for any of the students to trust the teacher. And once there is that subconscious reason, you know, you've built a relationship, you've shown the person you're tutoring, teaching, instructing, whatever the case, you've shown them that you care about them, then someone's going to take anything you say and be like, okay, well, this is not only accurate, maybe I trust that they give me accurate information, but this is also probably helpful for me. And that will just allow the information to be stored in the brain way more smoothly. And on top of that, it'll allow for the retention of any student to be way higher, because people don't really care to listen for long periods of time to people they don't like or trust. It's just in our nature. It's even if you're saying something super interesting, but I don't really like you, it's like I'm prone to not care. And we've all kind of had this, you know, been in those situations where someone who maybe annoys you or whatever is talking, and you know that they don't really care so much about you. They just kind of just really like talking or whatever. And so they're talking away, and what they're saying could be very interesting, but to you, it means nothing, and you are not going to put the mental effort forward to retain any of it. So that's just a very brief, without getting into any literature of like why building relationship first is important, but in practicality, this is kind of something I've done, just so you guys can have one circumstance. In tutoring, I never start with the content. I never sit down and go, okay, like, let's get into the algebra. It's like, always start with like, hey, how was your week? How are you doing? Like, what are your plans? What are you, and this is students I've already built relationships with, but students I haven't, like, I would happily spend a first full, like, tutoring session just talking to them. And people don't understand that because they think it's a waste of time. And they think like, why would you someone pay for you to just have a conversation with them? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But what they're doing is they're too short focused, you know, and we'll talk about this a lot in the next tip, but like, being short focused is the quickest way to ruin big progress. Because if I'm only focused on, wow, what can I do for this student in 1 hour? What I'm going to miss is, what can I do for this student overall? And so taking that first hour, and sometimes not the full hour, but just to really communicate with someone and treating them like a person, not just a kid or whatever. And the powerful part too is like, yes, you do know something that they don't, but that doesn't even make you smarter than them. That just allows for a relationship to be built. You're like, oh, I have something that would benefit you. And so I get the joy of giving that to you. This will never go away from me. I think in every tutoring session I still do, I always take at least a couple minutes just to catch up with the student, because I'm there for math, but we are all human beings, and the greatest thing that we have is each other and Jesus and the like, all of the things that connect us, but it's not mathematics. You know, that's a sub thing that we are all trying to figure out, you know, whatever the content may be. And so I show them that my priority is them. And then when I'm teaching them, they know that I'm teaching them for their benefit. And that will always, always, always make people try harder, retain better, and trust you more. So that's relationship. That's the importance of the relationship in a nutshell. The next one I want to talk about is repetition. So repetition has been really screwed up in the school system, because we think about, okay, how many just immediate reps can we get on something, and that's how good you're going to get at it. But we don't recognize is how much time have you done those repetitions? Because I would say if you're going to do something, you know, this is a low number, but if you're going to do something 5 times and you do it 5 times back to back in the same day, then you are going to be way less efficient at that same thing, and you're going to retain it way less than someone who did it 5 times over the course of 5 days. Because what they did was let their subconscious sit on it. And letting your subconscious sit on something is wildly powerful. The subconscious does a whole lot of processing, like a whole lot that we sometimes really fail to recognize or fail to give it credit for, because our conscious thought thinks it's doing all the work. But really, just like lifting, you know, it's like if I work out in the gym, I think because I lifted weights a bunch or did a bunch of sets or really high weight or whatever, that is what makes me strong. But the actual time, that's what caused me to be able to get strong. But what actually gets me strong is my sleep, where the muscles, you know, they move out that lactic acid, they fill in those micro tears, the muscle recovers in the sleep, in the recovery. Our learning is very similar. It's like you are able to see something and it's like you may be able to replicate it, you know, in that moment or whatever, but for you to process it, you need time. You need to let your subconscious process it for you. And so for this goes for anything. It's like, wow, I didn't really understand that article. Well, read it, go to bed, read it again. Instead of reading it and being like, I'm just going to like grind through trying to like read through every sentence by sentence and figure out what it's saying. Just let your subconscious do the work. It's a very fluid, easy way that actually will save you time and make you a much better processor. And this is great for problem solving. So what I've been recommended to do and what I started doing for even a lot of math assignments through college is like you get the assignment, you read through all of the questions, and then you're done. You're done for that day. Then you go to bed, you let your brain sit on it, and the next day you do all of the questions until the point where it seems like you're going to start to struggle. And then you stop that problem, move on to the next. Do the same thing. Go to bed, wake up the next day, revisit all the problems, and you do that 2-3 times, and even the like assignments that seemed impossible will flow out of you very easily in a lot less time. And now there is always a joy in the struggle and always a joy in the like, I have to do this, and doing things when you don't want to. That is a very good skill to learn. But if we can do more things over time, over greater lapses of time, we'll understand them better, do them better, and accomplish them with actually just less stress. So repetition is fun, and we really need to get it out of like, here's this 30 question worksheet and I want you to do it by tonight, and it's good because you get the busy work and the reps. It's like, that is not how our brains work, and we need to really step away from that because it's just hurting our students. Additionally to this point is how we structure the education as a whole. Like before, I was saying that sometimes the best way to ruin something is to look at too short of a time frame and to do it. So it's like when I look at how much can I teach someone in an hour, that would really ruin being like, okay, how much can I teach someone in 5 months? Because what I don't care is I'm not taking this massive information and chopping it into little bits and then trying to feed each bit 1 hour at a time to them. What I'm looking at is going like, okay, here's this huge mass of information. Where can I probe at different places during these hours so that in 5 months, the whole picture is very clear? And I know that may seem weird, but it's just your approach changes when you know you have time to do stuff, which we do. You know, it's like with the school system, we have 12 full years to teach someone math from beginning to end. And we look at the whole thing and just slice off little bits and feed them one at a time. We go like, oh, here's how to add and here's how to multiply. And it's like we miss the part where we probe and go like, okay, here's how you add and here's kind of how you might see this way in the future. And so we look at this whole massive math information and go like, here's 12 years worth of time. How can we actually show someone all of this so that they understand all of this in 12 years, as opposed to cutting it up and being like, okay, how can we show someone this little chunk in one day? Because what that does is make a very fractured understanding of mathematics for even the people who go through it well. The cool thing that we can do is start introducing harder topics way earlier. And that may look like, wow, we introduce a really basic form of algebra by the time kids in second grade. And that may seem really simple or like really too complicated for someone in second grade, but you just think of like, okay, they learn how to add, they can add, they learn how to multiply, they can multiply. You know, maybe that's the extent of second grade for a lot of kids, but it wouldn't take much to be like, hey, what if instead of multiplying 2 times 3 equals 6, you said 2 times something equals 6. And the kid pretty easily will go like, oh, cool, like 3, yeah. And, you know, you can make them start thinking that way. And then that's where we typically stop. But it's like, take them through the process of actually solving something algebraically once you've introduced that. So say like 2 times x equals 6. If we do what we did, you know, undo with division because they understand division, and let them start feeling the actual processes of algebra like in second grade. And that's just one finite example of like anything, you know. And I'm saying what we do is have almost everything that a student would learn through high school right now be introduced to a student before fifth grade. So you would be talking about calculus in fifth grade. You might be even introducing it originally in third or fourth grade. Because once you have seen the topic, then your brain tells you, oh, I'm familiar with this. And once you're familiar with something, you feel comfortable. Once you feel comfortable, your ability to tack on extra information is way higher. It's like when you're driving in a city that you don't know at all, someone could tell you a couple road names and it's not very helpful because you have no place to connect it. But if you're driving in a city that you're familiar with and you encounter a new road, because of the context that you already know, it's very easy to place that new road in your mind map of the city. So what we should do is get someone a rough mind map of mathematics and reading and anything else that you're trying to teach them, and then start to fill in the details. Because when we're looking at the 12-year picture, it's like, I don't have to necessarily get them to be perfect at algebra by the time they hit fourth grade or fifth grade or whatever. But by the time they're done, I want them to be really sufficient at algebra and really sufficient at calculus, you know, whatever it is. And you can hit all of those topics very easily and within that time frame in a way that students would feel super comfortable with all of them. And this is just science of learning. You know, you just separate the information, let the subconscious do the work. So the last key that I want to talk about today is about reinforcement and encouragement. The funny part about this one is we really want to encourage effort and not ability. And this may seem a little weird, but let me talk about it a little bit more. So studies have shown that if you encourage based on like, hey, you're really good at math, you're really smart because of like how you did this. You know, you take an assessment, you do it, someone goes, you did well, you are good at math. Then the next time they do something in that same subject field, they actually tend to do worse than if you took that same person, gave them that same assessment and said, hey, you put a lot of effort towards this, so you did well. Those people tend to do much better on the next assessment, the next whatever it is. And this is why. It's because you are training someone to fall in love and appreciate the process it takes to get somewhere, not the destination. Because the destination, especially in mathematics, you know, or reading or something, it's like all these destinations are really small relative to what we're actually doing. So it's like if you get really good at algebra, you're not a good mathematician, but that's typically what we tell people. We go, wow, you're really smart because you can do this algebra well. And it's like what you've told someone is like, hey, you're really good at this naturally. So what our brains do is go, oh, well, then that's cool. I probably don't need to put as much effort to be good at this. When in reality, the thing that got you good in the first place was because you put a lot of effort in. So the thing to get you improved is going to take a lot of effort. And as a lot of us know, if you become an expert in something, it's like, it's really easy to learn a lot of the basics to where you feel like you understand something, but it's really hard to master those last little bit of things to make it so like, wow, I really understand how to do something, or I really do this well. And we've been complimenting people on what we think they want to hear, which is, wow, you are smart, you are good at this. And it's like, no, you tried really hard. Your effort brought you to a good place. Like, these are the things we should be saying to kids. And it's a very subtle thing, and it's very hard to break if you are currently an educator of any sort, trying to break that habit of, because the positive encouragement is really good. And we think that like, wow, this is what the kid wants to hear. And it's true. That is what they want to hear, but it's not what they need to hear. Because what they need to hear is the truth of what got them there, is your effort brought you here. Your effort made this good. And what that does is next time they approach something, they know, okay, I need to apply that same effort. And that same effort, or if not more effort, will get me to have success in this task. And if they associate the good and like the good result with the effort, and they focus on the effort, then they will be an amazing learner for life, and there's nothing that they can't learn. As opposed to if you say, you're an amazing reader, you're an amazing whatever, and then they'll hear other stuff where like, oh, maybe your skill's not so much in math, or maybe your skill's not so much in reading. Then they go, oh, I'm good at some things, bad at other things. I should stick to only what I'm good at. And if I were to try to get good at something that I'm not good at, it would be really impossible and take a ton of time. As opposed to the mindset of, hey, I've really spent a lot of time and effort on math, and therefore, when I see math, I typically do well. And I haven't spent a lot of time on reading, and so it makes sense that I'm not very proficient at it. And if I wanted to become proficient at it, it would just take the effort that I put towards something else. And so it is a very realistic way of looking at how our brain, like, or how our skills actually get developed. And it wakes us up to being like, okay, yeah, I'm good at something. And it's not just because I like am naturally like insane at this thing. It's because I actually spend time doing it. And typically, you know, if you are someone like myself who grew up, like, people were saying like, oh, you're really good at this and you're not so good at this or whatever, you typically still will spend more time on the things you're good at just because you feel as though you get rewarded in that and complimented. The dangerous part, though, is when you do get complimented on that, your mind will try to preserve that outlook that other people have of you. So you're actually more prone to cheat and to hide and cover up things to make it look like you're still performing at the same goodness level that you were before. And this is, it's kind of comical, right? Because it's like the people who were good at math, we have now kind of forced into this box of like, sometimes they will lie and fabricate things to keep that impression, when that doesn't matter at all. It's like, I don't care if you did poorly on something, but I need to know that you did poorly on something so we can get it fixed. But if they're effort-based, it's purely like, wow, if I didn't do well on something, like, I want to know why, because I want to put in the effort to make it right and better. And so all that's to say is be super careful on how you give compliments and how you because we should be positive, we should be encouraging, but you just want to encourage the right thing, because the mind will take that way further than you think. So just be aware of that. Okay, thank you guys for listening to these three keys. That's all for this episode.